So as Kyle was saying, as we were beginning our worship, we are integrating in a worship leader. We are integrating in and trying to move away from our recorded music. Many of us are now vaccinated. Masks are being phased out of our life. I am so excited to be able to see your face and for us to have this time of worship together. But one of the things that we really want to continue to do is turn to one another, sing to one another. Let these words that we're singing be an encouragement to one another. When we were in masks, we were disconnected. We were unable to really fellowship and connect with one another. And so during this time, even though we still have the recorded music, even though it's not exactly like we remember it, turn to one another. Let the smiles on your face brighten someone else's life. Let these words really transform our lives. I'm so glad that we get a chance to be here. I want to say thank you to our elders who are continuing to lead us through the ever-changing times that we are dealing with COVID. Thank you for this congregation and your gentle and kind response as we work through some issues. Last week, we had a little over 100 in this room. We had about 15 or 20 in our overflow room. We had another 15 or 20 in our kids' class going on in worship. So we were about 130, 140 here, plus about 60, I think, were online. 60 devices, anyway. I don't know exactly how many people were around that. But we are kind of getting back to our full steam, and it's good, and it feels great. And so I'm so thankful for their leadership. I want to let you know that this week, I've got my family, or my in-laws, in town. And so stick around, get to meet my mother-in-law and all of Kara's siblings and nieces and nephews, and we are going to be spending some time showing them North Carolina, because we've been here for almost 2 years in quarantine for almost half of that, so we are experts on North Carolina, and we're going to show them all that we know and see. We're so excited to have that opportunity, but this Wednesday, we will not have our online class because I will be out traveling about and being with family, and so we will continue on our midweek boost Zoom class on June 30th at 7 p.m., and we will be discussing Lot. TJ Bostick is going to be leading a camp out for some of our youth. And so he's asked right after services, if you're going to be a part of that, if you would just see him out here in the lobby. They're going to be taking off on Friday. And so he wants to make sure that all the final details are arranged. And please see TJ in the lobby. Last but not least, on your chair, there is an encouragement card. This is twofold. I want to encourage you to encourage one another. And so you can put your name and somebody else's name, write a note right there on the back, and then you can put that in the collection plate. We will make sure it gets mailed to the person that you are trying to encourage. Secondly, I want us to notice that we have been talking about this passage in Philippians. Philippians 4:8, and that's where we're going to be in just a moment. And it says, whatever is true, like we talked about in Rosa Parks' life, whatever is noble, as we talked about in Corey Timboom's life, whatever is right, J.M. McCaleb, he was a missionary in Japan, whatever is pure, when we're talking about General Washington and General Benedict Arnold, whatever is lovely, when we're talking about Susanna Wesley, whatever is admirable is what we're going to be talking about. And next week, we're going to be looking at whatever is excellent. But in 2 weeks, July 4th, we are going to be talking about whatever is praiseworthy. Whatever is worthy of praise. And so I want you to write down, hey, Matt, here's something that's happened in my life. Here's something that I've seen God do in the midst of these challenging last few months. Here's something that I want to give praise to God for. And then on July 4th, as we're talking about these other things that are praiseworthy, I'd like to read off some of your statements. And I'm putting a card out there so you don't write 14 pages. Okay, just give me a highlight, give me a little bit of the story. Let us share and let us rejoice in the ways that God has blessed, led, and helped us through these last few months. Now, this is Father's Day, and I want us to encourage the men that are in our life. I want this lesson to be for everybody, but specifically, I want us to walk out of here encouraged about the opportunity that God gives us as men. Just a few weeks ago, we were talking about the unique opportunity that God has given for women. And I don't want to make this so much about the biological father or the adopted parent or whatever, but in our lives, as we get an opportunity to connect with our children. Last night we were out at the Dash game with several families from the church. And where I was sitting, several of the kids were gathering. It was right by the aisleway. And so they were right there. They're not my kids. I'm not going to adopt them into my house. But I would love if they come to visit every once in a while. But I had an opportunity to influence, to encourage, just to smile. And so as I saw them come in this morning, several of them gave me high fives or fist bumps, a little bit more energetic because of that previous experience yesterday. That's what I'm talking about in our lives as we get to relate. Tonight, or today, I want us to talk about something that is going to help us shine bright in our life. So whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, and listen to this word, whatever is admirable. Admirable. Something that stands out. Something that is strong and noble in character. Something that is worth repeating in the story. You may remember this scene a few years ago in 1992. So that's going a few years back for some of us. It was the Summer Olympics in Barcelona. There was a British runner by the name of Derek Redmond. He was poised to be an excellent contender for a medal in the 100-meter race. Or the 400-meter race, I'm sorry. About 100 meters into the race, you may have seen this video. He rips his hamstring and he goes down on the ground as all the other racers pass him. This race lasts for only about 40 or 50 seconds, and they have already done one lap around the track. But Derek goes down, and in a few moments, he rises up and he begins to hobble his way across the track. Through the stands, down comes his dad. He breaks through security, and the dad grabs Derek by the arm, and they limp along as they cross the finish line to a standing ovation. Whatever is admirable. Think on these things. Today I want to tell you a story about Eric Liddell. If you ever watched the movie Chariots of Fire, you might have seen his story. Maybe you've heard about this. Also, another British Olympian. Back in 1924, Eric Liddell had an opportunity to run. In fact, a year prior, he was getting ready to run in a race that was going to qualify him for the Olympics. And as the men gather around the line, this is on a grass track way back then, they gather on the line, the firing gun goes, and there's jockeying for position, and Eric Liddell gets pushed down. He falls to the ground, and the rest of the runners run ahead. Now, this is different than Derek. He doesn't pull a hamstring, but he was pushed down. And so they're all now several meters ahead of him. And Eric decides that he is going to get up and he is going to run. And he is going to run as fast as he can. And in just a short order, as they come around the second turn, he's already caught back up with the pack. As they come around to the straightaway, he is now leading. And even though he was on the ground, he wins that race and qualifies himself to be a part of the British Olympic team. A few minutes later, when he was asked, "How did that happen?" He got up and he said, "Well, the first half, I ran as fast as I could. The second half, I ran faster with God's help." Now, Eric Liddell is an individual that even at that time had already made a name for himself as being an individual who had specific, purposeful, self-inclined decisions about his faith and about his life. He would not participate in any of the rugby matches or the races that happened on the Lord's Day. And so Sunday was a day of rest for him. Sunday was a day of worship for him. And in a few months, as he qualified for the Olympics, for the 100-meter race, he finds out that that race is going to be run on Sunday. And as the story is told, many people start to gather around Eric and help him to justify the scenario that, "Eric, you'll have plenty of time to be able to go to a worship service. You'll be able to finish those things and come and be a part of the race." But that wasn't Eric's decision. In fact, Sunday, from sunrise to sunset, was his day of worship. It was a time for him to engage in rest and study. And so he declines the offer to run in the Olympics. They commissioned the Olympic Committee to change that date on his behalf. They won't make that exception. The race continues to be scheduled for Sunday. They were able to then put him from the 100-meter race into the 400-meter race. For those that are good at math, that's four times as long. And so he is scheduled to run in the Olympics in the 400-meter race. And on the day that he took off to go worship, as the rest of the world was watching the Olympics and all that was going on, Eric goes to a church service, and there he receives this note from an older anonymous gentleman who writes this and says, "In the old book," meaning the Bible, "it says, 'Him that honors me, I will honor,'" referring to 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 30. Eric says, "No matter what happened, that was the most exceptional moment of my time there in Paris." Now, spoiler alert for those that are going to go home and watch The Chariots of Fire, because it's an excellent movie. He ends up winning the gold medal. To show what an athlete he is, in an event that he had not trained for except for just a few months before the Olympics, he sets a new world record, and his time is just 3 seconds slower than that Derek Redmond who ran in 1992. It is currently 4.5 seconds slower than the current world record. "I ran the first half as fast as I could. I ran the second half faster with God's help." Eric is an individual who stands out in history not because of his great performance, though it was great and significant. Eric stands out because of his faith in what is admirable in standing up for what is right. I want to share with you a couple things about the word admirable, the way that we can interact with it, the way that we might want to engage it. First off, I want to let you know that if there's someone in your life who is admirable, I want you to tell them. Actually, pick up the telephone and call them and say, "I recognize in you something that is unique. I see someone in you that is rising up above everybody else. And thank you, Dad, for being that. Thank you, so-and-so, for being that person in my life." It doesn't have to be a male. It doesn't have to be someone you're related to. But if it is today, make that a wonderful day to say, "Father, I appreciate you." Number two, tell their story. As we see in TV, as we see in YouTube all the time, get a camera, record some of the events, grab some of their pictures, and let that be an inspiration to those that are around us. What if we as a congregation rise up together and we say, "I know someone who is admirable because this is what I see in my grandfather as he rises every morning before the chaos of the day. I see him reading his word over, or God's word over and over again." What if we grab that and we put that on Facebook? What if we shared that with the world? We tell them, we tell the story, and then we teleport. We actually put ourselves into that. We grab a hold of those attributes and we apply them to our lives. We let them influence who we are and how we are going to live. Admirable is a mindset. It's not a position. Now, sure, it's easy to think of Eric Liddell as he wins the gold Olympics, as he wins something that's significant. The whole world is cheering his name. They make a movie after him, and it is a great thing. But admirable is not just a position or just a mindset. It's not a position. It's a mindset. And when we start to think about how we are to really live our lives, isn't that old saying, "It's not whether you win or lose, but it's how you play the game"? Isn't that really important in our life? I mean, dads, haven't we been in situations in which it seems like the deck has been stacked against us? Haven't there been some times in which it seems like we are losing ground, but our attitude is going to make a great difference? Our attitude, our vision, our expectation Paul will say in Philippians chapter 4, verse 11 and 13, I've learned what it is to be content in all situations. Whether I win a gold medal or I don't even get accepted to the Olympic team, whether I'm striving for a promotion and I get it or whether I don't, I have learned to be content. Whether my family is joining me on Father's Day or not, I have learned how to have my attitude focused on the Lord. And David would write in Psalms chapter 19, verse 14, reminding us that even when we are alone, when we are isolated and we are disconnected, that our integrity, what is right and admirable, still applies. He says, may the words of my mouth, may the thoughts in my mind be pleasing and holy to you, Lord. These quiet moments, maybe those moments in which you're with your cell phone or you're with your computer, may my thoughts be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Now, admirable people, they will win and they will overcome. This is the truth of life. So often we take a score in the middle of the game and we think that that's really how we are going to finish. So often a team will come to the ninth inning in which they are down and out and feeling like they can't win, and the coach gives no inspiration. The coach gives no joy, no vision about what they can do, and the team just acquiesces and accepts their loss. But other times you come to the ninth inning. You come to the final quarter, and time is running out, and the coach will grab everybody right around the bench and say, look, this is our time. We will win this game, and here's what we're going to do, and he will set the record straight. If we're not winning, then the game's not over, because Christ has already won the victory. And we will win when we stand firm and hold on to the faith that he has given to us. If it feels like we're not winning, the game's not over. And the old adage, winners never quit and quitters never win, has never been more true about our faith than right now. Listen to what is written in Hebrews. Let's throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles. Chapter 12 says, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer, the perfecter of our faith. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. But it goes on. And in chapter 12, verse 5, it says, and have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the ones that he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Therefore, endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as a child. Today I want to challenge us, men, to be the men that God has designed us to be, even when it feels like the world is overshadowing, even when it feels like things are going difficult. This is our time to shine. The story of Eric Liddell is a unique one because in 1924, he wins the gold medal. He is, in all accounts, in Scotland, kind of like the Michael Jordan, the LeBron James. He is kind of like our Anna Howerton, who just won the state championship for golf for Reagan High School, or Elliot Trin, who just helped kick Mount Tabor to their football state championship. They are at a pinnacle of their career. They are enjoying a moment of success. And in 1925, Eric Liddell walks away from all of that. He becomes a missionary to China. And he shuns all of that accolades and fame. And he moves to China. And there, in about 10 years, he marries a young lady who was from another missionary family there in China. In 1937, Japan invades China and begins a great, devastating war with them. In 1940, Eric and his new wife and two children travel now to Canada, her home, via ship. They are a part of this 50-ship convoy. And the German U-boats have now kind of infiltrated around the oceans of the world, and a torpedo is shot at the Liddell's boat. By the grace of God, it was a dud and does not destroy their boat. But five other boats in that convoy were sunk. They get to Canada, and while they are on this time with family, they are in prayer, and they decide that they are going to return back to China. They are going to make that dangerous voyage across the sea and return back. And about the same time that Pearl Harbor is being bombed by the Japanese, all the internationals there in China are being rounded up and moved to a concentration camp. Eric's family is able to leave China quickly, but Eric remains to be a missionary during these hard times. And while he is in this camp, life is pretty hard. But Eric is an optimist. Eric is a faithful believer in God. And so he finds work to do as he cleans the latrines, the toilets. They've been robbed of all of their plumbing by the Japanese to use in their other facilities. He begins to become a teacher for the young kids. He puts on plays and musicals. He organizes sports and activities for them. And he leads worship and daily Bible study. As the years go on for this concentration camp, the morale continues to sink lower and lower. One Sunday, several kids are out playing a game of hockey, and a fight breaks out. And Eric, the man who would not run on a Sunday because it was the Lord's Day, now is wrestling with what is the right thing to do to lead these children. And so he puts himself into the game as a referee to make sure that they have an opportunity to enjoy some of a blessing in their life. In just a few moments, in 1945, Eric Liddell is fighting a brain tumor. He doesn't know what it is, but he's fighting a brain tumor. And a young teenager comes to his room, and she stops by to see Eric as he's finishing up a letter to his wife. Sits beside his bed, and Eric talks about the need to surrender one's will to God in everything that one did. He said, in our attitudes, not just what we wanted to do and felt like doing, but what God wanted us to do. He started to say, surrender, and then his head went back. Eric slips into a coma, and he died that evening at 9:20. He was 43, never to see his family again. 63 years later, Beijing is hosting the Olympics. And they share some news that the Liddell family had never known. In the final months of his life, Eric was a part of a prisoner exchange between Britain and China. And Eric was given an opportunity to go home. But in that camp, there was a lady who was now pregnant. And she needed medical treatment more than he deemed he needed medical treatment. So he gives up his right to be released, to remain in that camp, to be a spiritual leader to these children and other individuals. I've been reading this book from Eric Metaxas, Seven Men. He also has another one called Seven Women. I've used it for a couple of the biographies that we've talked about these last couple of weeks. But one of the prominent leaders there in Britain, right after Eric ran, said this. Said, there are greater issues than the life of sports. And greatest of these is the loyalty to the great law of the soul. Here is a young man who considered the commandment to rest and worship high above the fading laurel crown and who conquered it. It was St. Paul, the tent maker of Tarsus, who watched the Olympic Games centuries ago and wrote, "They who run in a race all run, but one receiveth the prize. So run that ye may obtain it." And Eric finishes this section on Eric Liddell by saying, "God has a far greater plan for Eric Liddell's life than a gold medal that would eventually be forgotten, along with the other athletes who won it. And he has a great plan for each of us. Those plans may include the need to give up something that we highly value. But those who give up what we may most desire, if God has demanded it, the Lord will truly honor." Today we have an opportunity to worship together a living and great God. This morning we are gathered around as a family in which we all get to partake and share in the blessing of life and encouragement with one another. This word admirable can be pinned on anyone's chest for the gifts and the talents that they use in a way that is a blessing and an honor to those that are around them and to our Heavenly Father. This morning, admirable is what we think about as we plan out our life, as we live in a way that counts the costs, the things that we give up as trash and as garbage, as we press on to the prize that is so valuable that we will not stop even if the whole world is pressing against us. This morning we rise up to see the men, women, who are living a life that is admirable in Christ. We recognize today the fathers who have brought words of wisdom and God's word into our life. I want to challenge us today that we rise up and be the light that is needed in our home and in our world. If there's anything that we can do to help you in this race, our shepherds are standing by and they would love to talk with you and counsel you and pray with you. Our office is open throughout the week. Please come by and let us spend time with you in prayer and in study. This morning, as we join together, may our heart and our mind really rise up to see that we want to think about things that are admirable and lovely, right, true, and pure. We will set our minds on these things. We will walk together as we walk in the light of the Lord. Let's stand together and sing this song.
Lord, take my life. Through me.